Well, this hour, we'll take your phone calls with Dr. Lori Nadel as we talk about her work, The Five Gifts. But I'd also like for you to share with us any tragic events that you have personally gone through and how did you cope with it. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. Dr. Lori Nadel with us. Lori, where did we get your book, The Five Gifts?
Five Gifts is available in bookstores, and we're really trying to encourage people who have an independent bookstore in their town to please buy the book in a bookstore and keep bookstores in business. We are also available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com, and you can get a free emotional first aid tool at MindBodyNetwork.com whether or not you purchase the book. It's MindBodyNetwork.com. And just fill in the form, put in your name, and we will send you a free MP3, safe, effective, rapid-acting emotional first aid tool that can help to defuse panic very, very quickly.
Won't every individual at some time in their life go through these kinds of issues?
You know, the research says that most people will go through at least one. In fact, it looks like most people go through at least three in their lives. That can be, again, it could be something witnessing an event like an auto accident. When we witness something, we are affected in the nervous system and in the body, perhaps not just as badly as if we survived something, but it does have the same traumatic effect in the nervous system as going through something ourselves. So I think that we're all vicariously traumatized from being exposed to hours and hours of images all day. We see streaming images of people experiencing tragedies, and I think that that affects us also. But directly and personally in our own lives, we will probably go through three of them in our own lives during the course of our journey in this incarnation.
I remember when I was a 21-year-old reporter, Lori, in Detroit, and my assignment editor said, there's a fatal car accident on the freeway here. I want you to go out there and just, cover it for me. Call in a little report and we'll put you on. And so I did. So I drove out there and pulled over on the side, and there was this car that was, smashed against an abutment on the side of a freeway, and police weren't even there yet. I got there before the police. I was that close, as somebody had called it in, and my assignment editor, heard it on the scanner. And so I get there, and I see this guy in his car, and he's dead. And I'd never seen anything like that before. I'm 21 years old, and I'm just going, jeez, I mean, there he was. He was just dead. And I didn't know whether I was curious or panicking over that. But I never forgot that.
Oh, you certainly could have been both simultaneously at the same time. One of the things in Chapter 3 of the book, I look at how first responders cope with experiences like that. And, in fact, there's a movement within the first responder community to teach peers how to debrief each other, and using a model called the Critical Incident Stress Management Model. And basically what that does is it normalizes reactions so that you understand that when you're facing something like you experienced as a 21-year-old, that you can have a slew of emotions, or maybe in that moment no emotion at all, that you feel or recognize you could be numb. And that is also normal, because we're normal people having normal reactions to abnormal events, and we can experience a whole palette of emotions simultaneously because these events are shocking.
Let's go to the phone. Steve is truck driving in North Dakota. Let's start with you, Stephen. Go ahead.
Hey there. Second time calling in here, George.
Thank you.
With the doctor here, I heard you say earlier here about the power of the mind here to do amazing things. And myself, I've been able just to meditate, and some of the stuff I've been able to do sounds like borderline supernatural. I've been able to change my eye color from blue to green, yellow, orange.
Wow.
Been able to gain weight, lose weight, just build muscle. And, like I said, I drive truck here all the time, but I'm able to, the downtime to meditate, and I can stimulate and feel sensation in different areas. And I've been kind of playing with this stuff. And I believe that we all have this sort of like power in our mind. They say we only use like maybe 4 to 10% of our mind. And maybe this is just something that's in our DNA that we are able to do this stuff. Any feedback on it?
Well, I think that's absolutely true. We have potentials that we're unaware of, and we usually don't know how they will be expressed. The subconscious mind is 93 to 97% of who we are. And if I were to ask you, if I'm going to give you a piece of apple, and I'm going to ask you 10 seconds from now as you're chewing that apple, how many enzymes do you need to have in your saliva in order to break down that apple, can you tell me that?
2,300,000, I'm making it up.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But yet you know, right? Because you're going to chew the apple, your saliva is going to manufacture exactly enough enzymes, and you're going to be able to swallow and digest that apple. So we have all this wisdom that's basically imprinted in our operating system or in our DNA. And I think that, you know, a lot of what we discover as we learn how to meditate and we learn how to tap into the hidden power of the mind to heal or to create, that we're actually drawing upon this blueprint or operating system that has all this information coded already.
Lori, we have talked a lot about our power grid in that it could go out if a X flare from the sun is in direct path of planet Earth and it hits us, or an EMP attack, an electromagnetic pulse from a detonated nuke in the atmosphere, could also shut down the power grid for a long time. And experts say that if the grid goes down for 1 year, 90% of the American people would be dead just because of the tragedy involved with no electricity, no water, nothing works. How do you cope with something like that?
Well,
let's assume the power goes out for 3 months. There's chaos in this country.
There will be chaos, and there will be emergency measures taken to control the chaos. I went through that with Hurricane Sandy. We had no electricity for a month. The storm surge knocked out the town sewer pump, and so the water was contaminated.
Oh, my gosh. And what did you do for drinking water or bottled water? Did they ship it in to you?
It took 3 days. And what was interesting was that 6 months before the storm in May, my dad and then my uncle appeared to me in a series of three dreams from, like, Memorial Day. Like, another one was around the 4th of July, and one was Labor Day. And in each dream, they told me to buy water. And my father said, in the first dream, you're going to have an emergency and you're going to need water, so buy extra water. And then my uncle showed up in a dream, and they both died in the late 1980s. And my uncle showed up, and Uncle Nick said, hey, Lori, your dad's upset. You're not listening to him. You need to buy more water. And then my father came back on Labor Day, and he was very serious. He said, you really need to pay attention. You don't have enough water. So every time I'd go to the store, I'd come back with a couple of gallons of water. And my partner, James, was laughing at me. What are you doing? You're hysterical. This is insane. And I had 13 gallons of water and two cases of water. When the water supply got contaminated, it took 3 days for the Red Cross to arrive. And I was the only one on the block who had extra water to share with all my neighbors because of those three dreams. And I think that, you know, in times of chaos and in catastrophic times, our sixth sense becomes heightened, and we are able to receive information that is going to help us survive. And I think that learning how to pay attention to the images and impressions and inner voices and dreams that bring us messages is going to be a very important survival tool if and when the grid goes down.
Let's go to Kimberly in Miami, Florida. First-time caller for her. Hi, Kimberly.
That was perfect timing for my call from what she was just talking about. Thank you both for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Well, thank you.
And George, I've been a fan for so long, and I have never been able to get through, so I'm so excited to talk to you both.
Good.
Lori, this is an amazing show. I wanted to say something that actually goes exactly with what you were just saying. So for me, I mean, I have been through, I'm in Miami, so I went through the hurricane of 92, which was very bad, through Hurricane Andrew. But I was going to talk about the loss of a pet, which for me, and I think for a lot of people, is very, like a huge disaster and something so heartbreaking and traumatic. And so I wanted to say that I had never had any, I would say, like afterlife experiences or anything like that. And but I always had been open to that, and I wasn't, you know, scared about it. And so I had a dog for 15 years, and in 2011, I knew I was going to have to put him down because he was getting sick at the end of his life. And he was like my child. Like, I didn't know how I was going to do this. I even now, it, like, chokes me up to talk about it. But I didn't know how I would separate from him and how I would go on after I had to put him down. And so about like a month or two before I knew that the time was coming, I started like really talking to him every night. And I would always talk to him, but this was like a different kind of thing where I would, he was blind too, but I felt like he was looking in my eyes even though he couldn't see. And I would tell him that after he leaves his body, he needs to show me that he's around me and please to send me signs so I know. And I kid you not, a week after he was gone, there were so many signs. I thought I was going crazy. And, I mean, I can't even, I would take too long to go through how many, you know, what they were specifically. But, like, when you talk about the sixth sense, I just want to tell everybody that if they really are open to that, like, it really can help you heal. Because if I didn't, like, now it's hard to talk about because it's, like, so emotional. But if I hadn't seen these signs and I hadn't been sensitive to them and open to them, I don't think I ever would have healed from the loss. I mean, it took all that to heal me, but it was my mind, too, to help, like, open myself to it, because there were a lot of times that I questioned, you know, could this really all be happening? And I really think, even now when I look back, that it really was. Like, I think these signs were real. And then, so the end of that story is that about 6 months after his death, I adopted another dog that I was kind of hesitant about doing. But it was 1 week after I had my new dog that all the signs from my other dog stopped, like just stopped. And it ended with the leash that I was walking my new dog on, which was the old dog's leash. It broke when I got home. Like, I walked him on it very securely and we got home and the leash just broke. I mean, it was like there was no way to describe, like, why would it have broken like that? And I took that as a sign of him telling me that he was breaking the chain. Like, he was saying that he could see me, that I was happy now, and that he didn't have to keep showing me signs, that he could see that I found some closure. And so that was my story.
Well, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. And again, it's a great example of how our sixth sense can help us heal. My cat was close to 19. And I recently had to put him down because he was in heart failure. But a month to 6 weeks before he died, he appeared in dreams to three different friends of mine, one of whom runs a cat rescue. Two of them are people who are sensitive to animals. And then he also appeared to me in a dream. But first he appeared to three people I knew in dreams and told them that he was going to be transitioning soon. So he told them so that they could prepare me. So I really do believe, as the shamans have told me over the years, that all of nature speaks. And in fact, what they told me in the 90s, and one of the things that started me working on this book, was the universal prophecy that because our relationship with nature is out of balance, that the voice of nature is going to get louder and louder. And I think that when you or I are sensitive and able to listen to the voice of nature, then we are able to receive communications from our pets and animals, whether they're here with us physically or whether they're on the other side. And that's a beautiful story. Thank you very, very much.
What would you say is the number one disaster or tragedy that faces most people? Death?
Death and fear of death, although... I have a phobia of public speaking, although you probably don't believe me.
I don't believe you.
I do. And the fear of public speaking is actually the biggest fear in this country. It's bigger than the fear of death, and that's because when you're dead...
And you mean to be physically out there doing it.
Well, you don't have to face an audience, so mm-hmm. Why would you be afraid of death? But, I mean, that's a phobia is not necessarily, they're in the anxiety spectrum, but it's not a trauma. I think death, you know, people are mostly afraid of death. I did a survey, a nationwide Google survey for the book, and we found that a terrorist attack and displacement from home were actually two of the biggest fears, along with car accident.
Interesting. Art is in Port Arthur, Texas. Hi, Art. Go ahead, sir.
Good morning, George and Dr. Nadell.
Hi there.
Hi. Fantastic program. And George, I never thought I would ever speak to you on the air.
Well, I'm glad you made it.
I will get to my question in a minute, but George, you talked about your early actions as a news reporter. And, you know, I've heard for years that news reporters and people in journalism tend to imbibe more often than others. And, you know, that very well may be one of the reasons, because, like first responders, they see things that may not always get reported, but that are upsetting and disturbing, and it's just part of their daily job. And maybe that has an impact on them and causes them to find sources to soothe their disturbance. Doctor, the question is, and I am in an area that was affected by Hurricane Harvey. In fact, we probably hold the record here in this city for the amount of rain compiled over a short period of time, right at about 5 feet.
Wow, I'm so sorry to hear that.
5 feet of rain? Oh, that's right, I remember that.
6 inches. Yeah, we bested Houston, not by much, but we did. And there's a lot of devastation in terms of damage to homes. And unlike the area from which you are living, the median income here is not quite that high, because the Gulf Coast tends not to rate as high as the East, West, and the Great Lakes. But in the areas that you've worked with, the people that you've worked with following these sort of tragedies and disasters, have you seen in the communities an uptick in anger and violence, or is that an aberration?
Well, and I have said, Art and Dr., that road rage is at an all-time epidemic. But go ahead, Doctor.
Well, I'm sure road rage does seem to be at an all-time epidemic, and that goes to the second gift, patience. Studies have shown that people who have to wait more than 2 seconds for something to download will get impatient. And I think that, you know, unfortunately, I think that we're used to instant gratification. To go back to what you've been saying about the aftermath of a natural disaster, yeah, there's a huge amount of anger because you don't get the help that you need after a natural disaster. I know the community
services.
The vital services, but also the financial aid. The government doesn't step in to help you. Insurance companies and the water mitigation companies will try to cheat you. The bank that holds your mortgage will seize your insurance settlement check, and then they'll harass you with all kinds of paperwork. They'll accuse you of not having done your paperwork. And so, yes, the level of anger really escalates. It actually lasts for a few years after a natural disaster. And I'm so sorry that you're going through that. If you read the five gifts, I think you'll find some examples and hopefully some tools.
Yeah, they're laid right out there. Lori, we're going to come back and take some final phone calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM as we talk about the five gifts, discovering hope, healing, and strength when disaster strikes. Well, welcome back to Coast to Coast. We've got a great series of programs in store for you tomorrow. Steven Pinker joins us as we talk about the better angels of our nature. And then later on, Kevin Cook joins us with the Marian apparitions. Were they real? So I'm looking forward to that. That'll be on our next Coast to Coast program. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Our final segment here with Dr. Lori Nadell as we talk about her work, The Five Gifts. Forward by, of course, Dan Rather, formerly of CBS News. And he was on our program about 6 months ago talking about some of his works, too. And he's still a journalist, Lori.
That's right. He's the consummate newsman. He is somebody who upholds the best traditions in media. I think that he really is the spokesman for our times.
Yeah, I think so, too. It was unfortunate that that George Bush story and his producer really did the end run on him. Remember that?
Yeah, that was a horrible incident, and unfortunately, as he talks about in his book, rather outspoken, he was kind of set up because there were corporate interests and business interests at stake, and he was the fall guy for those. And you know, we really live in an age where very few corporations own more than 90% of the outlets through which we get our information. And big business is basically in bed with big government. And so it takes an important show like yours to really shine a light on the truth and give people an opportunity to explore that.
Yeah, I think they were looking for a way to retire him.
They definitely wanted to retire him. The chairman of Viacom, the parent company, apparently received a phone call from somebody who is believed to be connected to the White House, and they said, if you want to keep your extra television stations and you need a special dispensation from the FCC, you will get rid of Dan Rather.
Wow.
And that was in retaliation for the story that George Bush had gone AWOL during the Vietnam War when he was in the Air National Guard. Now, as Dan says, nobody ever denied the story. Nobody ever denied the facts of the story. But at the same time, there was a political agenda, and he was sacrificed to the corporate vision and the corporate needs to get a special deal with the FCC.
In the time remaining, let's take some final calls with you. Let's go east of the Rockies. Joe in Long Island, New York. Hey, Joe, go ahead.
Hi, Lori. Very interesting. I have two questions, but the first will be on your book, The Sixth Sense. You know, I've had a couple of things where, okay, I went to the track to jog one morning. This is several years ago, and the sky was split. You know, one was illuminated to the maximum light. It was almost bizarre. The second half was as dark as I've ever seen. This is like early morning. And it almost spoke to me, you know, and I was thinking, you know, you don't get coached on things like this being meaningful or relevant. It's almost like you would have to seek out, like, if you don't run into certain people or in certain circles, you're not taught about this stuff in school, you know, what these signs from nature might mean. It's almost like you're on your own to a degree and have to kind of take the meaning without having coaching about this maybe having being important. And my second question would be, being a journalist, do you find the media has dumbed down? Maybe there's less writers, like just more of a catering, like you said, to corporate interests. But like, okay, take this Russian interference thing. That's been repeated in the media every single day. Now, if I took a course where week one was Russian interference, week two was Russian interference, week three, I'd drop the course. I'd be too bored.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, to address the first issue, and I do address this in several chapters in the book, that, you know, we as a society, and I think in most industrialized countries, we've really become very divorced from the voice of nature. And if you live in an indigenous community, or if you're somebody, you know, like a sailor or a farmer, where you make your living by being paying attention to what nature is telling you, you'll find that there's a community of other people who basically are in touch with and in harmony with the rhythms of nature. One of the things that a disaster does is it rips away kind of the facade of our Google calendars and our cell phones, and it forces us to go to sleep with the sun. To go to sleep when the sun goes down, and to wake up when the sun comes up, and to kind of live with the rhythm of nature. And George, to address what you were talking about before, if there's an EMP or if the grid mm-hmm. goes down, we will kind of naturally revert to what our ancestors have done and we'll begin living more in harmony with the cycles of nature. So no, it's not something that we learn in school, but if we were to grow up in most other countries of the world, it would be a kind of something, a shared belief among members of our family, among members of our community, in our culture, that nature speaks to us all the time. And I think that that's an important thing to remember. In terms of journalism, I think that the Russian interference story, because it basically affects the safety and the fabric of our democracy, I really don't think that it can be overstressed. You may not like the way it's being reported, but the story is changing all the time. And I think if we become numb to that and we kind of tune it out, then we are vulnerable to having attacks like this continue. So I think it's important to be vigilant and to pay attention. And even when the details seem to be boring, to still pay attention, because this is now something that affects our survival as a democracy. Not pleasant.
Not pleasant at all. Joe, thanks for your call. Let's go next to Lisa in Omaha, Nebraska. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. It's
Hi, Lisa.
Nice to talk to you. My story is probably not related to any of these others, but I found some connection in what you were saying about hope, anger, and being a way through those things. About 13 years ago, my husband committed suicide, and I had two young children. I never really had the question answer why he did it. There were a few things that gave me ideas, you know, that he wasn't really feeling as good as he usually was. He was a physician, and he ended up, he had broken one of his hands, and like so many people, doctors overprescribed medicines, and he became addicted to oxycodone and those painkillers.
Oh, those horrible opioids.
I'm sorry.
Yes. And so, you know, I'm working with him and went with him to rehab and all that. And years went by, he seemed fine. And then one night, his father had passed away about 7 weeks prior to that. And he came home and he wasn't really himself. And he just said he had to go up to his office to do some lab work. And he didn't come home. And so I kept calling, and he was the type of guy that would always answer the phone. And so he didn't, and I went down to his office and found that he had asphyxiated himself, and it was a Memorial Day weekend. And just so many things flooded through my head. You know, I didn't even know where to begin. I had two children. You know, I had worked.
And you really didn't see it coming. I mean, you saw him depressed, but you didn't think he'd do that.
Right. It was like a baseball bat in the side of the head.
Yeah.
It was horrible. And a lot of things progressed from there. My son was 14 and my daughter was like 10 years old. So I saw the difference of them growing up. You know, my son had a lot of anger in him, and because he loved his father so much, and he was taken away, and so he acted out quite a bit. And I actually had to remove him from the town, and I put him in a, you know, I called some places and put him up in Utah in a survival type camp, and I was so scared. But I just wanted to get him out of the town and the people that he was starting to hang around with since this had happened, because he had gone to a Jesuit private school and it was so good for him that he didn't feel the self-esteem he had.
How did you make it through, Lisa? How did you cope? I mean, you're the one that took the brunt of all this.
You know, I think the few things that kept me hanging on were my in-laws disappeared. Basically, most of my family didn't really come around anymore, and that's always been a question in my mind. I have a couple of nephews that do, but it was mostly I had a friend and that kept asking me to work out with her, and it was the only thing that helped that I could actually talk to someone.
All right, let's get a little reaction because we're almost out of time here, Lori. I'd like for you to react a little bit to what you know.
Well, I'm very sorry that you went through that. Physician suicide is way, way, way up. Recently in New York, we had 3 women doctors at the prominent New York hospital who've committed suicide by jumping off a roof.
And they're sure it's suicide, though, and not murder, right?
Yeah, and you know, physicians, it's no longer prestigious in this country to be a physician. There's a tremendous amount of debt. People I've worked with, doctors in my own private practice, they're very frustrated because they cannot no longer practice medicine the way they believe medicine should be practiced. And so, unfortunately, there could have been a lot of factors that were preying on your husband that he might not have wanted to bother you with or share with you. And very often people don't know how to deal with our grief because it makes them feel helpless. And so they either disappear or they blame you for being hurt. And I do talk about that in the 5 gifts.
Not easy being a single mother either.
No. And you know, I remember with 9/11, so many women, they woke up in the morning and they had a husband and somebody to parent with. And by the end of the day, they were single parents of teenagers. Being a single parent of a teenager is always very difficult. I did it myself. But especially when you're trying to cope with the shock of your own loss and help your kids deal with the pain of their loss. And I'm so sorry that you had to go through that.
Isn't that horrible too, Lori? I mean, you hug your spouse goodbye for the day and they never come home.
That's got to be the worst, one of the worst things you could go through.
Let's go to Chris in Merced, California. Hi, Chris. Thank you, sir.
Hi.
It's not a sir. It's a her.
Yes.
Lady.
I heard you say, doctor, that we need to stop and listen to nature and figure out what nature is trying to say to us. But I remember on my first day of college, the professor said, be here now. It took me many years to figure out, in my opinion, what be here now means. And it means stop listening to all the noise that is negative. That is, a lot of it is how they say art imitating life. Now life is imitating the negative art that's out there, such as negative music and negative entertainment on TV or movies. And I'm not talking about news, but that's not entertainment. It's important to pay attention to what's happening in the world. But when we are listening to all that garbage, it's too hard to stop. It can even be, the negative could even be just being too busy at our home daily life with, you know, being a single parent and not having time to sit down and have time to ourselves and to listen to each other or to even listen to our own thoughts. And I want to know what you think about the negative media and entertainment that is out there for our children these days and even for adults. And I'll take
I think we have to spend less time with screens and more time with each other. I want to start a grassroots movement called Reach Out to Humans. And so sometimes instead of ordering something online, I'll call the 800 number and I'll thank the person who's actually there answering the phone because, A, they still have a job, and, B, because we can still talk to somebody at the other end of the phone. I think that, you know, as parents, it's our responsibility to either monitor or control as much as possible what our kids are watching on their screens, and I think that we need to take a break from being kind of so plugged in all the time, because it does disconnect us from our own nature, it disconnects us from other human beings, and it disconnects us from the world around us.
Less than a minute to go, Lori, and what is the biggest message you would like everybody listening to you tonight to take away from this moment?
Well, I think the 5 gifts are the biggest message. They're here for you. They're free. and they really will help carry you through all kinds of difficult situations. They are humility, patience, empathy, forgiveness, and growth. And you can get a free emotional first aid tool at mindbodynetwork.com. Those are my takeaways, George. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Lori. Appreciate you staying up so late on the East Coast.
Anytime.
You take care. Dr. Lori Nadel, the name of the book, The Five Gifts. And again, her websites are linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. Stick with us all week long. We've got some great shows for you. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Borelson, George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.